You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Hello and welcome into the 13th iteration of the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Craycraft, and I'm joined as always by Dante Guarneri. How are we doing today, Dante?
Better than the past 2 weeks now that I'm done with finals and we're finally getting to the holiday season. It's good to be back, though.
Yeah, it's been a while since we last talked, and a lot has happened in the NBA world that we both certainly have some thoughts on. So I think we should get started with the more sad news in the NBA. As many know, Craig Sager, longtime NBA reporter for the NBA on TNT, passed away after a battle with cancer at the age of 65. And kind of everyone's given their thoughts on how much he meant to them. And there were plenty of tributes throughout the NBA world over the last few days. What do you remember about Craig Sager?
I think the thing that's, of course, easiest to remember is, one, the attire that he always wore, and that'll always stand out in memory. Just his ability to match his humor and his personality with what he was wearing. That's something that'll always stick out in my mind. But even more so, just his ability to connect with players from all different generations, from all different points in his own life, it's really remarkable. And it's something that, you know, as guys like us who are kind of amateurs and just kind of do this stuff on the side, it's really nice to see that someone that does seem just like an amateur, someone that can connect with people at such a human level, succeeded so much in his lifetime.
Yeah, and the thing that I that I kind of noticed throughout this is just how much he really meant to the entire NBA world. Like most NBA reporters, if they passed away, there'd certainly be some kind words said about them, but I don't know how many would get a moment of silence from every team in the league, which is pretty cool to see. And we saw all of them with their shirt, all the players wearing those Craig Sager like suit shirts, and it was a good thing to see. But yeah, I think he will be missed, as everyone knows, and his legacy will be carried on as he kind of made sideline reporting cool. But I don't think we need to talk about it too much more, just because everyone's talked about it so much, and it's just kind of depressing in this joyful time of year. But the other kind of touching thing that we saw last night, we're recording this on December 19th, was Tim Duncan getting his jersey retired with the Spurs. We saw many great speeches last night during the game, including Greg Popovich, which it was his second big-time speech in the last week, along with Craig Sager, because he knew Craig quite well. But how did you like the way that Duncan was tributed towards?
Yeah, I mean, he deserves the world. They should name the city after him. He's always been one of my favorite players, and for a couple of reasons. One, outside of basketball, he was an Adidas guy. He got me really into Adidas at a young age, and then that carried on with my guy Dwight. But TD was always a guy that you know, did his job, made it seem like he cared, and he just put his nose to the grindstone and he just got after it. And that's really all you can ask for from your best player, and I think that's a sentiment that Pop tried to share, and he did it really well. But the game's going to sorely miss Tim Duncan.
Yeah, and he was just kind of the pillar of such a solid franchise that continues on with Pop still there, and Parker and Ginobili, and just all the teammates he affected. And he really kind of brought stability to a place that you wouldn't think to be a basketball power across the NBA. He made one of the smaller teams succeed. But into some more exciting stuff, and not as quite dim. There have been a lot of kind of contractual things going on in the NBA with the new CBA being agreed upon and the new voting system for the All-Star Game. And I want to begin with that. So in the All-Star Game from now on, 50% of the vote will come from the fans, 25% from the media, and 25% from the players. My first takeaway from hearing this was that I think it might legitimize All-Star appearances more as people get into the Hall of Fame. I know many journalists and people on NBA Twitter have just talked about how maybe All-Star appearances shouldn't matter too much because sometimes people don't rightfully get in as one of the best 12 or 15 players in their conference, and I think this might help aid that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think at least from a present perspective and how this will currently affect the All-Star Game and the league as a whole, I think we'll see maybe a little bit less international influence on the game, perhaps. With, you know, every year there's always one or two guys that sneak in because they get a large contingent from another country voting for them, and that making all the difference. I think we'll see this year that maybe there are players that are huge names for fans, like Joel Embiid, that won't get the same vote that that they would have gotten last year because of how the rules have been changed. And I think maybe we'll see a little bit more of a competitive All-Star Game. And I don't know if this will change how the regular season is played, but at the very least we'll get a little bit better of an understanding of how the players feel about playing against certain guys in the league.
Yeah, I hope we get to like see who certain players vote for, just to see like if there's any. It just could create some additional conflict in the league, and that's always a great thing to talk about and hear about. And just who maybe are some unheralded really good players across the league. And then, as we mentioned just before, the NBA and the NBA Players Association agreed to a new CBA, a new collective bargaining agreement in the last week, and there have been a few things that have come out of it. We had heard previously about a month ago about a few details leaking out, but we've learned more. The players will continue to get between 49 and 51% of the BRI. The max salaries will increase, including for players over 10 years or more of service, could be up to $36 million next year, which, estimating that out in a five-year deal, would be $210 million, which is obviously nothing we've ever seen before. And then another big difference that we've seen is the over 36 contracts have now turned into the over 38. So it means that the salary cap for these older players would have previously not been taken as into effect, but now that has changed. Are there any other things that stick out to you, and what are you most happy with about this deal?
I really like the creation of the two-way contracts, allowing more players to get some spots into the NBA, and also just having I guess more of a balance with the D League and creating more of a minor league system. I think this has a chance to really make the developmental league legitimate and have a big effect on how players treat their time with the NCAA, how they treat their time with the league, and how they make their decisions coming directly out of high school. Maybe players will start going out to international waters, into the international games, to shore up a spot in just for a second round pick to be on the D League, but know that there is a very good chance that they could very well end up on an NBA team within the next 2 years following that draft. So I think that to me is the biggest part. And of course the money, like you mentioned, the addition to the max contracts and how these Chris Pauls and LeBron Jameses of the world are going to get paid over the next couple of years. And thinking about Steph Curry and his contract, the numbers are going to be pretty crazy, but I think it's important to remember that the NBA only has 15 to 17 guys on a roster. They have a lot less of the pie to split up compared to the MLB or the NFL, whose revenue is probably whose revenue is due, in fact, actually overshadow the NBA. So it's an interesting thought, but you know, we're going to see a lot of guys get a lot of money. But it's important to remember that maybe as a whole, the NBA still isn't as valuable as other leagues.
Yeah, it certainly seems though that this league is kind of more on an upward trend than any of the other professional sports, it seems.
Definitely
like, because the NFL with safety concerns, and the MLB with pace of play and sometimes lack of excitement, depending on how much you really love the game. But basketball is very easy for people to get into, and I think the NBA has also done a great job of using social media and just being the most modern league out of all of them. But with those two-way contracts, I did think that it was important, and I think it might actually help gain some exposure to the D-League. It sounds like we're getting kind of close to every NBA team having a D-League team, which would, in effect, make that minor league feeling, as you said. And I wanted that for a while, and I think that would be very exciting because there's NBA nerds who would follow the D-League religiously if they knew that it would kind of prosper their future NBA knowledge. But yeah, it's exciting that we don't have a work stoppage. We get to continue talking about basketball, and there won't be any less games. There will actually be more time in the season, as they announced. They're lengthening the season an extra week just to try and eliminate some more back-to-backs.
As good as bringing down the number of games. Shortening the preseason was helpful. I think there are a lot of good things. I think it is a good thing for us, the fans, that there was no work stoppage and there was no complaining. But on the flip side of that, I think the players should always be pushing for more. And though they did get some things at the tail end of careers and at the beginning of careers with the over 38 and the two-way contract negotiations, they probably still should have pushed for more of the revenue. And like I was mentioning before, they have less pieces in their pie, but that also means that those 30 owners are getting a large, large portion of this pie and only keeping it to themselves. So right now it's, 49 to 51 of basketball-related income for players to owners. And, it used to be 57 for the players, and that's, I think, maybe closer to what it should be because they are the ones putting the product on the floor, even though the owners are the ones putting up the money for all of this.
Yeah, and we saw Draymond Green come out a little outraged with a few things in this and that. That might stem from other people's concerns across the NBA with just the kind of mid-level kind of guys just not really getting much of any improvements, really, because most of this CBA was focused on higher-paid players and the older players and the new players and lesser-paid players. So the middle group in the NBA, which I don't even know if Draymond's in that. I'd still say he's on the higher end. So, but there is some concern amongst players. And if they did add a few, like even 4%, get up to 55 or so, that might sway the difference in the end. There have been a few other news points in the league, including it has been announced that Blake Griffin will be out 3 to 6 weeks with an arthroscopic knee surgery that'll keep him out until sometime in January, maybe a little bit after. And this obviously hurts the Clippers big time, as they are currently 20-8, which is actually fourth in the West, which is stupid. We'll see how they're really put together. And this, something interesting could be how a Chris Paul DeAndre core works together, because there have been talks about whether to break up this core. They started off the season so well. They haven't been quite as good of late. But this team, this will be a preview of it, but we can get into it in a little bit, but I think they should stay together.
I've always been a Chris Paul DeAndre core believer. I think we've seen it time and time again. I think the argument goes that the Clippers can survive in the regular season without Blake Griffin, but they need him in the postseason to advance if they want to. But the fact is that they've had him in the past couple of preseasons and postseason, and he has made an impact, sure, and he continues to improve, but it also goes to show you that maybe he isn't the answer, and the fact that he has the most value right now, and you know that you could possibly get the wing players that you need, the wing stoppers that you need, and knowing how many games on average he misses a season, I think GM Doc should talk to head coach Doc a little bit more and see if there could be a game plan in the future that doesn't revolve around Blake or isn't necessitated by Blake. Instead, why don't you go and try to find someone that can guard Kevin Durant? Because we've seen it time and time again, Blake Griffin cannot keep up with these longer fours, these quicker fours in the modern NBA.
Yeah, I kind of think of the theory as if you stay together long enough and you're that good, eventually maybe you'll catch a break and you can win a title. A lot of people bring up the Mavs team in the early 10s with Dirk, and just maybe not the most exciting team, but they just kind of strung it out and happened to play an amazing series against a big three. So I think that is kind of the dream if you're the Clippers, and I just don't know if you can improve a whole lot losing Griffin, just because cap space and signing people like Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford to $10 to $15 million a year contracts, that kind of eats away your salary cap pretty quick, and then you're gonna have to pay Chris Paul basically whatever he wants, and DeAndre's a big contract, and JJ Redick could leave, so they have a whole whirlwind of things to figure out as they go forward.
I feel like a mellow for Blake trade still makes too much sense. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, we can. Then the Knicks might finally have to stop playing Joakim Noah.
Yeah, isn't that what everyone but Phil Jackson wants right now?
I mean it does make tons of sense, and Chris Paul and Carmelo get to buddy up. I think Lala, who I think I've said before, I think wears the pants in the relationship. I think that she could deal with being in LA. It's one of the few places that I think she'd enjoy.
Exactly.
But, oh God, only if we were the GMs in the NBA,
right?
It'd be a lot more fun.
Yeah, there'd be a lot more trades, though.
a lot more overreactions.
Yeah.
But that kind of, and the last piece of news is one of the more exciting ones, I believe. It's the Nerlens Noel saga, I'd say. So Nerlens Noel has recently returned from injury, and after a recent game, he had only played 8 minutes, and obviously a player of Noel's talent probably isn't very happy playing 8 minutes, and he voiced those concerns post-game. And then Brett Brown comes out yesterday and says that he is no longer in the rotation. So that got everyone stirring, probably broke down the ESPN trade maker to just everyone trying to find a place for him. And then today, Brian Colangelo comes out and says that he's not getting traded. We have too many injury risks among these centers that we can't really afford to get rid of him. And he believes that all will work out and they'll figure it out. So before we get into some fake trades, which I know you're very excited for, what have you taken away from this whole situation?
Well, I think there's a lot to unwind here. I think for one, for Noel to instantly be coming back from injury and wanting to get big minutes seems unreasonable. And I totally get that he's shown his ability to play and him wanting to get in rotation and try to play alongside Embiid and perhaps, like Colangelo said earlier today, play up his own abilities to set himself up for a contract bump this upcoming offseason. That being said, I do think that he is the most movable piece on the 76ers team. So in my mind, it still makes a lot of sense for them to move him. I think that if they can improve the wing positions or shore up the point guard position behind eventually Ben Simmons, I think that makes a lot of sense for them, and you know, maybe Okafor isn't the best player in the league, but having three really good, at worst really good centers, or just good, Okafor's not that good, is a great thing to have, but that means one of them is movable. So I think the overreaction may be right for Noel, because he should be on the court. He should be playing. But at the same time, if the 76ers do want to trade him, maybe they should put him on the court. And maybe they should show people why he's so good and why he's worth maybe, I don't know, Brooklyn's first round pick. I don't know.
My take is that I think Noel is better than Okafor, and Okafor should be traded. But I guess the counter to that is just Okafor hasn't been very good, so I don't know who really wants him. But let's get into the trades. I've been working away at a column about this, some potential trades, and two of the ones that I came up with that I found kind of interesting were the Allen Crabbe for Nerlens Noel deal, which has been talked about. We talked about it on the podcast probably 6 weeks ago or so, and it still just makes a ton of sense in my mind. Portland has a bunch of wings. Philadelphia has a bunch of big men. It's kind of a surplus for surplus trade. And the other one that I found, which I kind of like, is Brandon Knight for Nerlens Noel. For Philadelphia's side, I think that Brandon Knight is a capable player who can work well by stirring up some point guard issues, provide some spacing. He's a good shooter. And then once Ben Simmons does finally come back, Simmons and Knight would be a capable ball handling, a main ball handler going into crunch time. And when Simmons does have the ball, you can space out Knight into the corner and he'll be able to knock down shots. And then for Phoenix's side, their young core would be Eric Bledsoe, Devin Booker, TJ Warren, Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris, Alex Len, and Nerlens Noel, which I think could become quite formidable, depending on who ends up developing out of that group. But what have you thought of any trades that really work well in your mind?
So I've been struggling because I think as I was alluding to, there are places that the 76ers need to improve upon, but I don't know exactly what pieces they need right now. And I think they're still very much building towards a future. And in my mind, it still makes a lot of sense to let Embiid play as many minutes as he possibly can, let Ben Simmons play as many minutes as he possibly can, make it look exciting, but don't win games. Continue to lose. Keep bottoming out until this core is ready to move together. So with that in mind, I think the trouble that I'm having, like I said, is trying to get these trades together, and I'm actually making one as we speak, and I'm trying to move around some pieces.
Well, while you think about that, I just think that the problem is that they have a bunch of players who would be best suited for front court positions, and there's just not enough minutes to go around. You have Okafor, Noel, Embiid, three centers who should be playing center and not really being on the court together. And then you throw in Saric, who should not be playing anything less than the four. You have Simmons, who's best suited at the four. You have even a guy like Robert Covington, who would flourish as a small ball four for 10 minutes a game. And then there's a guy like Rashawn Holmes, who most don't know about, but people around the NBA do like him. So it's a very interesting situation that they put themselves into. And I think this is just the problem Hinkie created, is just he didn't care whatsoever about the quality of how well the pieces fit together. He just cared about how good the asset value was.
Yeah. Well, I think I got something here. A fun one.
Let's hear it.
Fun one. All right, the 76ers are going to receive. Actually, I don't know who to start with here because it kind of gives it away. All right, I'm going to start with the 76ers. 76ers get Scal Labissiere from the Sacramento Kings. Huh. And Amir Johnson from the Boston Celtics. And okay. Hold on. One of the two picks from Boston. We can talk about that at the end. The Kings receive Avery Bradley and Nerlens Noel. And
okay.
The Boston Celtics get DeMarcus Cousins.
Oh, it all comes around.
There it is.
It all comes back to Boogie and trades.
It's got it. We have two guys that want to leave teams. We have two teams that desperately need to shake it up in Philly and Sacramento and maybe even Boston, and Boston, who clearly wants to win a title now. So why not give up a guy that's averaging 18-8 and a $12 million expiring contract in Amir Johnson and Bradley, like I was saying, 18-8. So
I think I might actually like it if you send the Brooklyn pick to Sacramento, because I think they're going to need it to be willing to get rid of Boogie. But that's not bad. You get a very talented young player. You get Bradley. On-the-spot trade reactions are tough.
So according to Hollinger's analysis, this trade does not affect the 76ers at all. The Kings lose 9 wins, and the Celtics get 5 wins. Which makes sense.
That makes sense.
I agree. I think the Kings do need a pick, but if that is the case, then maybe the Kings also need to give the 76ers a pick.
Yeah, or Boston could just give both of theirs this year, give their own to Philadelphia, which I still don't know well for Scal. And I'm going to be perfectly honest, I haven't watched any Scal this year. I don't even know if he's playing. I couldn't tell you what's going on with him. Amir Johnson's fine, but once again, it's another big. I'll give it a C+.
So Scal's played 2 games in the past 10 days.
Oh, there it is.
His PER is a 16.7. So we know he can play.
Well, but that stat in small samples is...
Sure.
Basically, I probably have a 16.8 PR.
Close to it.
PR,
close to it. Higher than Noel's, maybe. Definitely Okafor's. Okay.
Yeah, we'll keep working on this. Hopefully there are trades, because trades make everything better. But I guess do you have anything more to say on?
No, we need to sit on that. Give it a little bit more consideration, I think.
Yeah. The next things are kind of more actual basketball oriented. I think we should start with let's talk about the Houston Rockets, because you asked me the question whether they are for real or not, and I am extremely happy with the way the season is going. I love James Harden. They have been really good this year. Their offense flows so nicely. Their defense hasn't been good, but their offense just outscores basically everyone. They've won 10 straight games, including a win over the Warriors. So I think they're for real. I'm a believer. I'll give my hot take. I think they're going to be in the Western Conference Finals this year.
Ooh. Wow. So, I think there's definitely a chance, right? They're 21-7. They've won 10 games in a row. They barely lose at home. They score 113 points a game. Those are great numbers all around. My concerns, they're not that deep. They don't really have any pieces that they can move to help them out there in that category. I think they'll definitely be a team that'll be scraping around for players that make the waiver wires or whatever. But, you know, relying on a Clint Capella, Nene back line is a little bit concerning for me, at least when you get to teams like San Antonio, you get to teams like L.A., even Utah, who has a self-proclaimed best big man in the league, and Rudy Gobert.
I think their depth is decent. I think they have 11 capable guys, including Montrezl Harrell, Corey Brewer, and KJ McDaniels. So maybe you don't believe in one or two or all three of those guys. Nene's been good.
I think I believe in them to an extent. I think they are all very baseline above average players, if that may, not even above it. I think it ranges from average to above average, and that's it. They obviously have their superstar, but I think in this league you need more than just one at this point.
Yeah, he controls the offense so well. He can just give a shoulder fake and he's got you, because he's got one of the best first steps in the league. Maury. What's his name? Daryl Morey, is that his name? Daryl Morey deserves credit for the way he put together these contracts with Gordon and Anderson. I said it when we were talking about the Anderson contract before. I still don't know how well it'll go later in his career, but right now they're just bombing threes or Harden's getting fouled, and I love it. I think I'm a believer.
I think they have a shot, and I they're 10-0. You don't win 10 games in a row on accident. That being said, playoff basketball is a whole other world, and we saw even last year how the threes can so suddenly stop hitting when it comes down to those big moments. So.
You're providing valuable points, but we're on the internet, so we must give takes.
Fair enough.
How many teams in the West do you think could reach like the conference semifinals?
Ooh.
Realistically.
I'd say seven. I don't believe in Memphis.
So you're not counting Memphis?
Not counting them. I think every other
playoff team. Are you including Portland then?
I'm including Portland. Ooh. I think Portland makes a deal before the end of the season.
They better.
Yeah.
Well,
here's the thing. They kind of have a cushion because those top seven teams in the West are so good. And then it's kind of Portland in this, like, purgatory type scenario of the West, and then everyone else is pretty average, and the Nuggets haven't looked good.
No, I don't. I'm kind of bewildered that they're that close to the playoffs.
Yeah.
I certainly have my doubts about Portland. But this was one of my questions. So, in the West, what do you think are the tiers?
Yeah, I think you have a definitive one in Golden State. I think everyone else is lagging behind them, and I don't think San Antonio is there, and I don't see why they would ever get there at this point. Though I do think that they could beat them in the playoffs. I think you can group the San Antonio, Houston, LA, Utah teams together.
I agree.
And then Oklahoma City in Memphis and as a regular season team, sure.
Why do you hate Memphis so much?
Maybe it's my concern that they haven't had their whole core together, and I think it may be a belief that that's going to be the case forever. They're very much a group of people that have trouble with injuries, from Conley to Gasol to Parsons to Randolph to Vince Carter. It's a bunch of players that have had injury plague seasons in their past and have continued to do it. So I just don't see why there's any reason for me to believe that that'll change. At least from this point, they still haven't had their offense clicking, and I'm just not a believer just yet. And I don't know, first season head coaches, a little bit worrisome, especially when it's a guy like Fizdale, who we've never really seen before and can't really characterize.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little bit more optimistic than you. Marc Gasol's been unbelievable this year. He could be honestly considered in the back end of the MVP race, just because he's been able to carry the team with the injuries to Conley and Parsons. But I feel like that's more of a positive for them that they haven't been that they've been able to win games without their whole core together. In terms of tiers, I basically agree. I think Golden State's on their own. San Antonio, Houston, LA, Utah are there. And then the next one, Memphis, Oklahoma. And I think Portland's in a tier below, but I think they might be in a tier themselves.
Yeah. I think you can put all the teams on the outside of the playoffs in a tier by themselves as a group of people trying to figure it out.
Yeah, because Dallas, who has the worst record in the West, and Denver, who's even Portland, who's in the playoffs, are within five games of each other.
And I don't know if you could even make the argument that between Dallas and Denver, there's a five-game difference in talent, or a four-game difference in talent.
Well, yeah, last ten games, they're both 4-6. Yeah. I don't know if that's due to schedule or whatever, but it's certainly interesting. But this kind of relays into what I wanted to talk about with the East, which is so I think we can both agree Cleveland is kind of on their own at the top. Mm-hmm. Is Toronto in their own second tier?
No, I'd still put Boston there. I think those two may be on their own. I think Boston had a lot of struggle early on in the season, and they're still, you know, maybe even trying to figure out their identity right now. Yeah. But I think they can compete in a 7-game series with Toronto for sure, and maybe even Cleveland.
Yeah, Boston's weird to me. And the East is
uglier.
As separated, yeah, it's as separate as the West is, the East is bunched up.
Yeah.
Because you have Orlando, who's 11th in the East, is four games behind Boston, who's in third in the East.
That being said, I do think that there's a legitimate difference in talent. And I think that's maybe, I think these regular season teams will bump heads a lot. But I don't know if you can say that Charlotte is only, you know, 4.5 games better than Orlando, because I think I'm taking Charlotte, you know, 4-0 in a series, definitely. Right? And even Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee has shown that they can be a legitimate team.
I've just happened to find myself watching a ton of Bucks basketball lately, and
you don't regret it.
I really like it. No, I'm not gonna lie, I like it.
Yeah, it's. I don't think anyone expected Giannis to make the sort of jump that he did, and now that we get to see it, it's been great.
I want to have a hot take about him, but I don't know what I can say that will either underwhelm people and just be like, oh, everyone thinks that, or it's going to be too high. He's just been really, really good. But this, I am kind of interested in 4 through 10 in the East and who you ultimately think will make the playoffs based on what we've seen. So in my eyes, I think Charlotte and Milwaukee are probably my two best bets to be 4 and 5. And then it's anyone's game between New York, Indiana, Chicago, Detroit, Atlanta. And for some reason, Washington's still in it, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, I think I still very much think Washington has a chance. And, you know, I don't think it's every day you see a player drop his second 40-point game this season, only 26 games into the year. And I think, you know, they very much have the talent there. It's just trying to put it together in Washington. But I think Atlanta's should rise back up at some point. I think maybe the only teams
they've really been struggling lately. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I think right after we started talking about how great they were, they went on like a 1-9 skid or something like that. Yeah. So maybe we should just start talking about the Knicks a little bit more, and hope they go down that path as well. Though they'll probably do it themselves. So either way. But I think the Knicks and the Bulls are probably the most likely candidates to drop out of there. And after that, it's really up to Detroit, Atlanta, and Washington to pick up the slack.
I think Detroit is has an easy road to coming back up. Reggie Jackson, who may be their best player, he's certainly close with Andre Drummond, has yet to play. And so I think that's an easy way for them to improve more than anyone else, and they're still at 500, so I like them to get into the playoffs. Indiana's so weird. They out of the rest of the teams that we're talking about, they probably have the best player in Paul George, which you have to like.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, and I mean Miles Turner as well. You can't really say enough about Indiana. I think they're still a couple pieces away, but they, you know, they still have Paul George, and they still have Thad Young. They have pieces there. I think they're a good enough regular season team to get into the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Yeah, we might have a numbers problem where there's going to be, as we've seen in previous years, like two teams who are going to be very close to making the playoffs that don't out of that group that we've been talking about.
I think the better question may be is, are we going to see another under 500 team make the Eastern Conference playoffs?
I mean, with the way the West is going, I don't know that I haven't done the math on it, but I would assume that Oklahoma City is pretty close to on pace for 50 wins.
Yeah.
So 7 50 win teams in the Western Conference. Certainly, they have to come against someone, and either the bottom is going to fall out of a few Western Conference teams, or it's going to come from the East.
Yeah.
Are there any other kind of storylines that really stick out to you that we haven't touched on?
No, I'm kind of excited to see the Clippers, like we were talking about earlier, and how they deal with Blake's absence again. I think this is going to be the chance for teams like Utah and Memphis even to kind of rise up and challenge some of the other top Western Conference teams for those playoff spots and getting home court advantage for playoffs. We also have the Christmas Day games.
Oh, yes. I am not prepared for that. Let me get them on the schedule.
Got a great slate of games.
Yeah. This is looking excellent. Only two non-playoff teams in here right now. Beginning the day at 12 p.m. Eastern time will be Boston, New York. Then we got the game everyone's been waiting for, Golden State at Cleveland. And then we got Chicago at San Antonio, which is Minnesota at Oklahoma City, which should be fun. And then I feel like this has been four straight years now, but L.A. versus L.A.
Yeah. You know, I don't even mind it. I think this might be one of the better years for this matchup.
True. The baby Lakers are fun.
Yeah, and I think, if we're going to go down and kind of do a pick 'em right here, I think I'm actually going to pick the Lakers in that game. Just kind of bringing it all together. Brandon Ingram's first Christmas game. They match up really well, I think, at least in my mind.
Yeah.
I take the Lakers there.
I think Chris Paul could cause some troubles for D'Angelo, mm-hmm. but that I like that game. Boston, New York should be fun. Get Kristaps against Al Horford a little bit, and just the glory between those two teams and kind of the rivalry. Golden State, Cleveland, we could have a whole podcast just on that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm actually probably going to take Golden State in that game. Golden State, in my mind,
I think I agree.
I think without going into a full podcast about it, I think just Golden State's ready to ride there, and they're always looking to show up teams that kind of showed them up at an earlier point. So,
yeah, if the finals are starting today, I might still take Cleveland, but there's a lot of time until that. I think Golden State will win the game. I'd probably go Boston, Golden State. San Antonio. I'll take Minnesota to beat the Thunder, and then I'll take the Clippers. But this is an excellent slate. The NBA rarely screws it up in terms of this. They know how to get big markets along with interesting matchups.
Yeah, I mean, this is just the NBA does it well. The season is randomly generated to a certain point, and then there's Christmas. And making sure that our entire day is filled with just watching Christmas Day games. What's, I guess, really interesting, just to kind of check this really quick, Christmas is on a Sunday. So we're going to get a lot of...
Sports.
A lot of sports in one day. And I just want to check. Is that... That's week 16 of the... week 7. Week 16. So we're gonna get we also get
the ratings for that will be very interesting.
Yeah, that's the first thing that came to my head. It's gonna be a lot of back and forth, especially the no bowl games, but at the very least you're gonna get a lot of conflicts with NBC and Fox.
I kind of forgot that was
and CBS. Happening. A lot of good games for football, but. You know, I think my eyes will be more glued towards these for whatever reason.
No, I agree. I watched, I didn't have much going on during the day yesterday, so I had to watch too much NFL football for my liking. So, but that is also a separate podcast. Well, I think that just about is going to wrap it up here. We're planning on a podcast the day after Christmas. Talk about those games. Hopefully there's a lot of fun ones, maybe a news tidbit or two, hopefully a trade, but I wouldn't count on it with even crazy NBA personnel people probably see their family around this time, so it should be fun. Well, Dante, this was a blast. I look forward to doing it again. And you should follow us on Twitter @CoastToCoastPod, the number 2, not the letter not the word. But thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys later.